Deer are abundant across the region, not just in the countryside, but in our towns, too. Ashland, in particular, looks like a drive-through wildlife park at times, with deer frequently loitering alongside and often in the city streets. Proximity aside, there are some issues with the deer population, especially in the Rogue Valley. People who frequent the woods are noticing dead deer around the countryside. It appears to be a virus, one known to wildlife observers and quite deadly to the deer. Steve Niemela is a wildlife biologist with the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. So this is called adenovirus, is that right?
Yeah, adenovirus.
Adenovirus. Yep. Okay, I got the accent on the wrong syllable. Tell us about it.
Well, it is, as you mentioned, it's a disease of the deer family. It's an acute, infectious, and often fatal viral disease. It was first identified in California in 1994. We had large outbreaks in Oregon in 2002, which coincidentally was another very dry year. It can induce rapid open-mouth breathing, drooling, diarrhea. Often with fawns, you'll get a bloody diarrhea. Ulcers can form in the mouth and throat. It is transmitted by nose-to-nose direct contact, probably also through body fluids. So if feeding of deer, something we're always kind of railing against, but it's another reason not to do it. One deer comes, sticks his nose in the food bucket, leaves some saliva and some virus there. Another deer comes along and is able to pick that up. It's got real high mortality in fawns. Probably adults survive it a little better, but we've been getting a lot of calls about mature, healthy-looking adults found dead as well. And that's kind of the main call that we're getting is about deer that look like they're in very good condition and that they shouldn't be dead. They're just found dead somewhere. And this virus can kill very quickly. And so unlike some chronic conditions where deer would lose muscle mass, they would lose their coat would start looking in poor condition. This one kills pretty quickly, so it can leave them looking pretty good. The good news, as much as there is any good news, is that there is no known human infections from this virus, and it's believed to be pretty much confined to the deer family.
So no particular effect on domestic animals that we know of?
No, not with this one. Now, the one caveat to that is there's been a similar outbreak up in Douglas County in the Roseburg area among the Columbian white-tailed deer and the black-tailed deer up there. And they up there have found a different virus called EHD. So this one I've been talking about is adenovirus hemorrhagic disease. The one in the Roseburg area is epizootic hemorrhagic disease. And that one, again, does not affect humans but has been shown to infect other ruminants. It doesn't always cause disease, but they can pick up the virus.
So you've got EHD and AHD essentially on the loose.
So far, AHD is what we're suspecting down here. EHD is what they've confirmed up there. Although we still want to get some more testing done on really freshly killed or dead animals. Old carcasses don't help us at all. But we're hoping to be able to confirm more that it's just AHD working down here.
All right, but if it looks recently dead, that's potentially an animal that you'd want to see?
Well, it's more like if the animal is looking sick and they can call us and we have an opportunity to go out and possibly euthanize it and collect samples.
All right, but once it's dead, it doesn't have much use to you?
If it's really fresh, you know, if it's within the hour or something, but, you know, if it's older than that, then it's pretty difficult to get some of the samples we need.
Steve, you mentioned that adenovirus started showing up in 1994. Do you have any idea where it came from? Had it been sighted anywhere before?
Well, I guess I don't know the answer to that. And some of it could be, you know, just because you find something new doesn't necessarily mean it's a new thing. It could just be that your technology or your surveillance has gotten good enough to where you can detect it. In the 90s, we were often diagnosing this as another disease called blue tongue. And then after that 94 outbreak, I think they recognized after the fact that it was this new virus, adenovirus. Now, whether it emerged and was new somewhere or was just there all along and we just were misdiagnosing it previously, I don't know.
Well, you mentioned that this is at least a fast death. It sounds like a fairly rough one, though, because the internal organs, is it an Ebola-like disease in that sense that everything hemorrhages?
Well, it is in the sense that things hemorrhage, but a lot of it has to do with just fluids leaking, too. So often they will get a bloody diarrhea. especially with the fawns, you'll see a bloody diarrhea. They don't necessarily get that. Sometimes they'll get a pneumonia. So when we do the necropsy, the lung will just be filled with a yellow fluid.
What is that yellow fluid?
It's just a, you know, it's just pneumonia, basically. It's just fluid leaking out of the blood vessels, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that collects in the lungs?
Yeah, yep.
So it sounds like they actually drown.
Well,
that's kind of what pneumonia is, I guess, when it gets to
the stages. Yeah, I guess. I don't know if drowning would be the right term or not. But, yeah, they can die because they can't breathe anymore.
Yeah. So you're looking at different deer populations. For one thing, you mentioned EHD, AHD, whitetail, blacktail. So which kind of deer at this point are you seeing the adenovirus in?
Well, all the deer that we have down here in the Rogue Valley are blacktailed deer. So up in the Roseburg area, they have the Columbian whitetail deer. But down here, we pretty much just have blacktail deer. So that's what we're seeing it in Jackson, Josephine counties.
All right. And any idea how widespread?
It's pretty widespread. One thing I'd modify a little bit from your introduction is that the calls that we're getting at this point are not from hunters and outdoor enthusiasts, hikers and such. They're actually coming from people around their residences. So it is, Ashland is a hot spot. We've got a cluster of calls from Ashland. You know, we've got calls from East Medford. We've got calls from Grants Pass. Got a couple calls outside of Cave Junction. So basically anywhere you have even an urban deer herd, or a lot of our sort of low density rural residential housing that has a lot of deer herds, all those areas is where we're getting these calls from. So we're asking hunters, especially the archers, because a lot of times these diseases hit really hard in the late summer, early fall, which our archery season is open right now. So if archers are out there and they're coming across carcasses outside of rural residential areas, we'd like to know about that, because right now most of our dots on the map are from rural residential areas, and we don't know if that's where the disease is, because there's a lot of conditions that we as people create that allow disease to spread more easily amongst deer. Or are we only getting those calls because that's where the people are to find the deer, and it's really happening everywhere? So that's kind of an open question. We do know we've gotten 4 calls from the Dead Indian Plateau area, Howard Prairie, Shale City Road, Condy Creek, and that's kind of a more remote area and an important fawning habitat for us, an important summer range.
Steve Niemel is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a wildlife biologist with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, ODFW. We're talking about a deer virus on the move in the Rogue Valley. It appears to be adenovirus, a hemorrhagic disease. You can join us on the Exchange with your comments or questions, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Jolly in Medford sent in an email a while ago, concerned about deer in the front yard, the backyard, by his steps, etc., particularly in Ashland, and he wonders why the city doesn't gather up all the deer with their beautiful babies, which don't stay babies, he writes, and take them all to a far, far land and drop them in the woods where they belong. I don't understand why they're not doing that. This is an ongoing issue, it sounds like, in a lot of urban areas for people and deer coexisting, and a lot more deer, it sounds like, being attracted by the activities of humans.
Yeah, I think that's true. So there's a couple really good things brought up by that question. One is there are things I mentioned that we do as people that make these disease issues more prevalent. So we have these suburban, urban areas where we don't allow hunting. The predator population is a lot lower because, you know, we don't typically allow cougar and bear to stay in our area for very long, although certainly they show up. We provide food. And sometimes directly feeding deer, which can be bad, as I've mentioned. We have these nice, beautiful green lawns in the middle of summer when everything else is dry and has, you know, low carbohydrate sort of sugar levels. So I just got a call about a couple fawns that were dropped recently. They're 3 months late. I've gotten calls from people that have fawns in December. And these things that we do, just as being people living the way we do, can tend to throw deer off out of their natural cycle. I've gotten pathologist reports from diseases that are very uncommon in free-ranging deer herds, but have been found in our deer. You know, one of the pathologists on a report said, sometimes diagnosed in farm deer, this was a fungal infection, but it is very unusual diagnosis in a free-ranging cervid. And we found this in one of our high deer density rural residential areas. But in terms of the question as to why they're not just dropped off somewhere, this is one of the reasons. Because of the situation that occurs in our residential areas with these deer, they often have high disease loads. So as wildlife professionals, we can't just pick those animals up and move them off where our economically, ecologically important migratory deer herds are and potentially spread things.
Well, as you pointed out, we've already messed up the deer's life cycle a bit, and that would mess it up even further.
Yeah, it tends to be anytime we do something really active like that, there's a cascade of unintended consequences. And so that would be one of the unintended consequences is spreading disease.
All right, I want to thank Jolly and Medford for that email. Let's go to Catherine in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Niemela from ODFW.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't know if you've, I think you might have just answered my question about feeding deer. There's a lot of people that used to work at a general store. They buy bags and bags and bags of cob, corn oats, and barley.
Yep.
And throw it out for the deer. And it seems like there's got to be a connection there.
And that's, you know, you're right on. That's a good point. And the people are well-meaning for the most part. You know, they perceive themselves as helping the animals. They're providing food, especially times of year when they think food might be short. But there's a couple problems with it. One is, as I've mentioned, it can be a spot, sort of a nexus where the disease can spread to other animals quite easily. The other thing, though, is times of year when natural food, the content of the sugar and proteins just naturally changes throughout the year as grass dries and things die back. The flora in the gut of the deer, they're ruminants, so they rely on the bacteria in their stomach to digest plant matter. Well, those bacterial cultures are always changing. So if you throw a bunch of sugar in the form of corn into that deer's gut in a time of year when it's not prepared for that, it can kill the deer directly. We've actually had incidences out in Jacksonville where I went out and I picked up a deer that was dead. There's a food bowl with corn right next to it. The pathologist report came back that it died of what they call severe ruminitis. Basically, from eating that sugary corn at the wrong time of year, the deer was unprepared for it, and it died.
So the deer's body needs to know that it's not springtime anymore.
Exactly. And a lot of deer eat a lot of corn and are just fine. So it's not like you feed deer corn and it's necessarily going to kick over and die. But you give the wrong deer the wrong feed at the wrong time of year, and it can kill it directly.
Catherine, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Is feeding illegal in some communities?
It is. I believe Ashland has an ordinance that has banned feeding. There's been a couple other cities in our area that have considered it, but haven't implemented it. Feeding of other wildlife species, bear and cougar, is prohibited by state law, but the legislature has not taken the step to prohibit feeding of deer statewide. So it's still legal in a lot of areas. It's strongly discouraged by us. It's probably not a good thing for the deer, but a lot of people do it, and it's something, like I said, we discourage.
Back to the original topic then, the adenovirus. I mean, so do wildlife biologists like yourself see the viruses spread as nature's way of balancing out the deer population, or could it potentially decimate it way below a stable population?
Well, you know, we don't know for sure what's going to happen. I think that this is a virus that can have a population level effect, meaning that it can actually, it's potential that it can actually reduce the population as a whole. We won't know that probably, you know, maybe until we do surveys later this fall, get our hunting reports back next year, and it could be something that's not really observable until we see the long-term trends. And even then, teasing that apart from everything else can be very difficult. But yeah, I think it's possible that this disease could have sort of a population-lowering effect. It might not, especially if it's confined just to our residential deer herds.
Mm-hmm. So the O2 outbreak, for example, was how long did that take to play out?
You know, I'm not sure on that. I think a lot of these things tend to be sort of seasonal. A lot of these hemorrhagic viruses tend to peak in the late summer.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the EHD, not the AHD that I've been talking about here, but the one in Roseburg, there's actually a reason for that. Unlike AHD, which is transmitted nose to nose. EHD is actually transmitted through a vector, a biting midge.
Oh.
So when it gets colder and those midge those biting insects populations aren't around, then the disease naturally burns itself out. But right. with AHD, because it's nose to nose, it could go on for longer.
We have another phone call on the line. Here's Mike in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Niemela.
Hi. So kind of a two-point question. One is, do we know how many deer in Ashland that are being picked? And secondly, you know, while it sounds harsh, why can't, you know, if you can't take them up back into the woods, why can't they be euthanized, especially right. ones that appear to be sick?
All right, so roughly how many deer? There were some dropouts on the call there, Mike, but roughly how many deer in the Ashland area, and can you euthanize them? Steve?
You know, I don't know the specific headcount on the Ashland deer. I do know that there has been a committee put together with the city, and I think Dr. Michael Parker from SOU.
Yeah, I've run into Mike recently and realized we have to have him back on the program.
Yeah, you might do that, because I think he's put together sort of a citizen science survey, and he probably has at least a trend number, so maybe not an actual count,
mm-hmm.
but whether it's going up or down and relatively how many. So you might talk to him about that to get the specific number. In terms of euthanizing deer that are sick, well, for our office here, this is an outbreak that's occurring throughout, you know, two counties. So we don't necessarily euthanize every deer that's seen that's sick, because those deer possibly could recover.
Right. Okay. So what should people do if they see a live infected deer?
Well, they should definitely give us a call. If the deer gets to the point where it can't get up anymore, we might recommend euthanasia.
Mm-hmm. And what's the number?
541-826-8774.
8774. 541-826-8774. We'll put that up on Facebook. Steve Niemela from ODFW, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you.
All right, take care.